Let's have a look together at these three passages I've picked. The first one is from the prophet Malachi, speaking in about 430 BC. A generation of Jewish people had returned to their land from exile, but their initial joy had waned, and they were now losing the hope that had sustained them. They were neglecting the requirements of their faith. Their religious observance had become mere ritual. And the prophet Malachi criticizes a number of aspects of their failure. In this particular aspect, he's highlighting the inadequacy of their offerings at the temple, and he describes the meagerness of their giving as robbing God. These prophets didn't tend to mince their words. Page 909, if you want to follow it, Malachi 3, verse 8. Will a mere mortal rob God? Yet you're robbing me. But you ask, how are we robbing you? In tithes and offerings, you're under a curse, your whole nation, because you're robbing me. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. This principle of the tithe, of giving one-tenth of your produce for religious purposes, existed in many ancient societies, and it was part of the law of Moses. In Leviticus 27, verse 30, a tithe of everything from the land, whether grain from the soil or fruit from the trees, belongs to the Lord. It is holy to the Lord. Now, this ancient principle can be useful to us, and I will return to it shortly, but first I would like to give a couple of warnings here. First, remember this passage is in the Old Testament, therefore forms part of the Old Covenant. Whilst it's still an instructive concept, its force as law does not apply to us as Christians, for we're not under the Old Covenant, but under the new law, the law of love. The other cautionary note is to beware the misleading belief, taught by some in recent years, that the more you give to God, the richer you'll become. Whilst it's true that God blesses those who give to him in whatever way, that doesn't mean we'll always have lots of money or always have an easy life. If that were true, then it would mean that Christians who are poor or who have lost everything through war or natural disaster are somehow being punished by God for their lack of generosity. This is a monstrous distortion of the truth. Remember Jesus' words here. Truly, I tell you, Jesus replied, no one who has left home or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or fields for me and the gospel will fail to receive 100 times as much in this present age, homes, brothers, sisters, mothers, children and fields, along with persecution. Oh, but many who are first will be last, and the last will be first. Yes, God does bless those who give, but hard times and persecution come as part of the mixture. It's not just Cadillacs and caviar. The extreme prosperity gospel, as it's called, is an intellectual cul-de-sac which leads nowhere. Well, so much for the Old Testament. Now let's look at the New and see what Jesus has to say. Page 918 in the Church Bibles, Matthew 6:19. Do not store up for yourselves treasure on earth, where moth and vermin destroy and thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This is classic Jesus. He doesn't get bogged down in detailed rules about what we should and shouldn't do. He goes straight to the root of the matter. Where is your heart's true home? Is it in your money, your jewelry, your pension, in my case, or your property? Just look at what happens to them when the markets collapse, when the banks fail, and floods and war come. It's all gone. 5 years ago, you could have been building up a successful business, happily settled with your family in a fine house in Aleppo, and now, through no fault of your own, you and your family are fleeing for your lives, risking death in an open boat on the Mediterranean, having to hand over your remaining savings just to get into a country in the European Union. There are just as many moths, vermin, and thieves around today as there were in Jesus' time. Jesus goes on, "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." I couldn't resist the temptation here to insert a little bit of George Lucas from the original Star Wars film, Leia to Han. "If money is all you love, then that's what you'll receive." Sorry about those who are not Star Wars fans. Doesn't really add anything either, does it? In one way, Jesus' teaching is imprecise. He doesn't tell us do this or do that, but in practice, his message is stark. Get your heart, your priorities sorted out, and you can work out the details later. This message is particularly relevant to me. I grew up in a nice family, but my parents always seemed to be short of money. They would worry about this, and my father tended to get very depressed about it all. And probably because of that, I've always been very careful with money, being saving and investing rather than spending. There's nothing wrong with that, of course. Being prudent and budgeting carefully is a sensible way to live, but I need to remind myself personally of the need to be generous as well. Jesus' question as to where my treasure is stored is an ongoing challenge to me. So, we've seen teaching by Malachi, an Old Testament prophet, and Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. Now let's have a look at St. Paul's practical advice to the Christians in Corinth. Page 1099, 2 Corinthians 9, verse 6. Remember this: whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. Whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each of you should give what you've decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a generous, cheerful giver. And God is able to bless you abundantly, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. The context here, as Heather reminded us, is of a particular financial gift being made by one group of Christians to another. Throughout chapters 8 and 9 of this letter, and do have a look at the whole passage if you have time, Paul emphasizes that such generosity must be spontaneous, it must be unforced, and that it flows from and is evidence of people's experience of God's grace to them. Once again, the heart comes first. As they've learned about and experienced God's love for them, so they respond in a similarly generous fashion. So, what lessons can we learn from these three passages? Firstly, the principle of giving to God has been there right from the start and was a key component of people's duties under the Old Covenant. Secondly, that Jesus, as he so often did, took this principle and widened it. He opened up this idea of generosity, freeing people from a mechanical keeping of a law or a rule, but replacing it with a requirement that was ultimately tougher, the requirement for us to test our own hearts and examine our own motives against the standard of God's generosity. And St. Paul's teaching follows the same thread. The question of how much we should give is not about obedience to this or that rule, but about how we respond to Jesus' generosity to us. There's a very telling little phrase in Acts chapter 4. All the believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of their possessions was their own. No one claimed that any of their possessions was their own. What a showstopper. I deliberately ended the quotation at this point, because the outworking of this principle will differ from person to person and situation to situation. The early New Testament church in those very first years practiced communal living, pooling everything, and monastic and other Christian communities have also done so since. But other people, and at other times and in other ages, Christians have worked out the implications in different ways. The principle remains the same. The heart of our attitude should be that what we have belongs to God, and it's not ultimately ours in any case. We actually say in some of our services here in the Anglican Church, quoting 1 Chronicles 29, verse 14, I knew that, of course. No, Google is wonderful. All things come from you, and of your own have we given you. Getting our hearts right is the important thing. Everything else, thoughts, speech, and action, words, work, and wallet. Don't you love that? I just a bit of alliteration there. Let me do it again. Words, work, and wallet. These will all follow. So that's the theory. Now, some practical guidelines on giving. Number one principle in St. Paul's words, each of you should give what you've decided in your own heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion. It's between you and God. It's nobody else's business to tell you what to give. Secondly, how much anyone gives has, of course, to be related to their ability to pay. Remember how Jesus praised a widow for giving just a couple of coppers, because he knew that was all she had. Now for the tough one. I'm brave enough to go for it. What about this tithe business, this 10% principle? Now, although it's an Old Testament concept, there's nothing wrong with it as a starting point. I'm really glad that Katie and I were taught it when we were new Christians before we left university. It meant that when we got married and set up home, our budget, including our mortgage, was based on 90% of our income, so that our giving wasn't too much of a strain. I thoroughly recommend this to any young people starting out in life as Christians. However, if someone comes into the faith having already got a big mortgage and a family budget that only just works as it is, then giving 10% would be much harder, indeed probably impossible at first. Sometimes you have to work towards things rather than doing them all at once. Next, a question that I asked early on, and I bet none of you would have asked it, but I think it's the economist in me. Is it 10% of net income or gross income? Oh, my mind works in a funny way. The reply I got was, do you want gross or net blessings? Well, it was a kind of punchy response, but not really an answer, though I suspect it's the sort of thing that Jesus would have said. As with all these things, it's between you and God. My personal solution was actually to do both, to monitor my actual giving as a percentage of my net income, but also to look at my giving and the associated gift aid as a percentage of my gross income. Make what you will of that. Fifthly, should our giving all go to the church, or should we split it between church and other good causes? It's up to you. Some teachers say one thing, some say another. Katie and I split ours, but with the majority going to the church. Next, Katie and I are fortunate that we're both Christians. But what if your partner isn't? Should you try and insist on giving a substantial amount? My advice would be, not if you want your relationship to last. As with all these relationship things, financial things definitely need to be worked through together, not unilaterally. What if you're really broke and couldn't possibly afford to give 10%? Will God condemn you if you don't? What do you think? No, of course not. It's for you to work out together with your loving Heavenly Father. Now another one. What if you're pretty rich? Can you stop giving at 10% and go, yeah, I've done that, that's fine? Nope, it doesn't work like that either. Giving 10% is just a kind of starting point, a guideline for beginners. If you've been blessed with riches, great. Enjoy them and enjoy being generous too. As St. Paul said to those who God had blessed with wealth, it's so that you can be generous on every occasion. And your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. Finally, a question that was asked to me about a year ago a question that was asked to me a little bit earlier last year by a member of the 9 o'clock congregation. Does our church tithe? Does our church give away 10% of its income? The answer is, true politician's answer, no and yes. Let me explain. The church council itself only gives away a small amount directly. £2,500 is, the details are on the notice board over there. Some to our sponsored child, sponsored through Compassion, Rosa, and about £1,000 each to the Children's Society and a school in Africa which is supported by some other members of our congregation. But our church budget is designed so that if you include the money the church raises for outside projects, and particular in the moment for Potter's Village in Uganda, at least 10% of our total church spending is used for people other than ourselves. And that's the principle we work on here. Well, I think I've just about exhausted the what-ifs about giving. If we try and pin it all down too far to simple rules, we're probably not asking the right questions. It all comes down to this. God's generous to us and wants us to be generous in our turn. Why? Because he wants us to be like him. Neither I nor any speaker can tell you what you should do. Even St. Paul didn't do that, and he could be pretty bossy at times. It's up to each of us to decide within our own families, between us and God. Well, I thought I'd end this morning by putting on my treasurer's hat. Stephen Dove's not here, but he just loved the idea of a treasurer's hat. I don't know what he'd design. And give you a few facts and figures about our church finances. First, a very quick summary on the year just ended. For the full picture, come to the annual meeting after the service in a couple of months' time. We ended 2015 with a surplus, which is brilliant. Giving for general purposes by church members was a bit below budget. Income from other sources, fees, and giving for Potter's Village were well up on budget. But the real reason for the surplus was that spending on a number of areas was lower than we expected. That's 2015. What about 2016? It seemed to be handouts morning this morning. You received, when you came into church, a yellow handout amongst everything else. This is a handout about finances, which has got most of the facts on, so I don't need to go through those. The PCC, the Church Council, has decided on a budget to increase spending on three areas this year. Additional administrative support in the church office, the running costs of the church plant for its first 6 months from July to December, and in what we pay as our parish share, which covers the clergy and Stephen's housing and salaries, vicar training, pensions, all the other central costs. So we added up all these changes, looked at as realistically as we could at the other costs, and it produced a total planned spending for this year of £212,570. While we were discussing this in October, we used our average income in the 9 months, January to September last year, as a guide. We worked out our likely income in 2016, and we found we had a gap of £1,250 a month. Oh, what should we do? We looked again at the expenditure, decided it was all necessary, so we decided to go ahead. So our first target for 2016 is therefore to increase our overall church giving by this amount. The good news is that after we made this plan, between September and December, regular giving here has increased by £400 a month. So we're a third of the way to our target before the year even began. Target number one. Our second target for 2016 is a specific one that's related to the church plant, and it's likely to appeal to some people in particular. We estimate that setting up Christ Church North Ely may involve purchasing equipment and materials with a one-off cost of up to about £5,000. If this is something that's close to your heart, you might like to consider making a contribution towards this particular expense. The handout gives details of these plans and the answers to a few FAQs on the practicalities of giving. So please take this away, read it, and respond. If you want more detailed information on the church finances, Do also take a copy of the 2016 finance packs. These are available on the centre table and on the notice board to the left of the door as you go out. The Church Council, the PCC, believe that God is leading us to the plans behind this budget, so we believe that the money required will be raised. And in terms of this general budget, you won't be hearing any more from me this year, apart from the odd update on progress as the year unfolds. I don't want to bang on about money all the time. My last point is a trailer for the future. As you probably know, the PCC and its working party have for the last 2 years been investigating whether to undertake a major refit on the interior of all our buildings, the church, toilets, office, and so on. We've now developed some outline ideas and will shortly be consulting us, you, the whole church, on the possibilities. We're very excited about this and looking forward to hearing everybody's ideas and suggestions. As the detail and the scope of the project is still to be decided, because we haven't discussed it with you yet, we don't have any detailed costings either, of course. The overall cost will obviously be significant, but so will there be the potential benefits, both to us as a church and to the wider community here in Ely. We've identified some significant amount of existing funding which we can use for the purpose, and we're investigating other possible sources of finance, but it's likely once the plans are agreed, there will still be a need for some financial support from within the church membership in order for the project to go ahead. So, to sum up, the three financial challenges for this year ahead, two immediate and one future, are to increase our general giving by £1,250 per month. £400 of this per month has already started to come in, so we have £850 a month to go. I know this sounds a lot, but when you think there are 200 or so households represented here at St Mary's, it should be possible. Second target, only for some people here, to raise up to £5,000 for the setup costs of the church plant. And thirdly, to prepare for the longer term opportunities and challenges involved with a major refit of our buildings. Isn't it exciting? Well, I find money exciting anyway. And I pray that we may all receive God's blessings as we engage with him in prayer and participate, each of us according to our own circumstances, in the opportunities and challenges we face together this year. Amen.